Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, September the 10th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 5, the first paragraph at the top, and it begins with, "Liquor ceased to be a luxury," and it ends with, "Which renewed my wife's hope." Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Susan B., the 12 Traditions, Margaret N., and the readers of the text are Leslie M. and Robin P. Our newcomer greeter is Kaylee R., and our announcements is Robin P. I forgot this. The share ID for Wednesday, September 9th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 15,324, that's 15324. And for this morning's Thursday morning meeting, September 10th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 15,333, that's 15333. The OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Susan B. to read the 12 Steps. Good morning, Susan. Press star 1 to unmute, Susan. Can't hear you.
Sorry, Mo. Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. This is Susan B., recovering compulsive overeater, grateful to be here. The 12 Steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others with compulsive overeating and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
And thank you, Susan B. And will Margaret N., please read the 12 Traditions. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. This is Margaret N., and Northern California, 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Margaret N. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 5. In Bill's story, top of the page, first paragraph, liquor ceased to be a luxury, and it ends with, which renewed my wife's hope. And I will now ask Leslie M. to get us started. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service. I am Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater, from Long Island, New York. Liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. Bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day, and often 3, got to be routine. Sometimes a small deal would net a few $100s, and I would pay my bills at the bars and delicatessens. This went on endlessly, and I began to waken very early in the morning, shaking violently. A tumbler full of gin, followed by a half a dozen bottles of beer, would be required if I were to eat any breakfast. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. And there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. There is so much in this paragraph, but the first thing is liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. I certainly know for myself that, food was in charge of my life, I'm grateful that my last binge had been after I had been entirely abstinent for 7 weeks. So I knew it wasn't the allergy, that it was my thinking. And at that point, I knew that I was also as powerless over the food. I was also powerless over my thinking. And that gave me the final surrender that got me to the recovered state that I am in today. So I'm very grateful. But it was because I knew that food was going to be my master for the rest of my life if I didn't do the work exactly as it was written, and not decide that I was terminally unique and I didn't have to do that part or that part, whichever that was. The next thing was, this went on endlessly. You know, I have been in OA, this year I'll be in OA 30 years. And so, you know, I had 27 years in OA where there were some periods of white-knuckled abstinence, but most of the time I was in the food and lying about it, basically. I felt like I had to lie about it because I'd been around so long, I should have already gotten it, but I didn't. I didn't have it. And then this last sentence here, nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. And for me, I believe that is probably one of the ways to describe the disease. You know, oh, I got this. No problem. I can handle it this time, you know, and always trying to convince myself. I find now that I've had the spiritual awakening, that when I go to a meeting, I just need to share my experience, strength, and hope. And before I had this, I was always trying to convince everyone else and like daring them. But mostly I was trying to convince myself that I had it, you know. So I just have to remember that, you know, when people ask me now, oh, how did you do it? I just say, I didn't do it. You know, my higher power has taken care of all these things for me. And I'm so, so grateful. There's certainly work that I need to do. I need to stay entirely abstinent. I need to work to steps to the best of my ability. But I did not, you know, give myself this abstinence. I did not give myself the neutrality around the food and remove the mental obsession. I know that a power greater than myself has done that for me. And I'm very grateful. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Leslie, for getting us started. I'll just remind everybody where we are. We're on page 5 in Bill's story, the first paragraph. Liquor ceased to be a luxury and ends with renewed my wife's hope. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I will now take names who would like to share.
Donna B.
Donna B.
Jody E.
Jody E.
Sharon K.
K.
Sharon K. Who was after Sharon?
Sandy K.
Sandy K. That's two K's there. Okay.
Penny C.
Laureen W. I got it.
Barbara
okay.
L.
Okay, I'll put you down, Barbara. That's it.
Sorry.
Barbara,
thank you.
L, Penny C, Laureen W, and Barbara L. Okay, let me tell you who I have. I have Donna B, Jody E, Sharon K, Sandy K, Penny C, Laureen W, and Barbara L. Thank you. That was a very nice lineup. All right, we'll start with Donna B. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. This is Donna B., a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling in from Denver, Colorado. Liquor ceased to be a luxury. That word luxury just strikes me so intensely today, because the truth is that food, when I think back on my binges from the beginning of my disease until I experienced recovery, I would not call what I was doing a luxury. When I think of luxury, I think of letting go and decadence and definitely an ocean view someplace in that word luxury. But I was really a very, I was a cheap date. I bought my food from 7-Eleven. I would go from one 7-Eleven to another 7-Eleven to another 7-Eleven. So I was eating, in essence, gas station food for my binges, which is the antithesis of luxury. When I think of engaging in the experience of luxury, I think of it as an opportunity, a gift, a blessing, you know, to be on the beach, to be on vacation with my family in Mexico. What a luxury. But what I was doing with the food was not a gift, brought me nothing that was luxurious. It was pain, and it was crap, and it was awful, and it was killing me. It was destroying my life. So for me to see the words liquor, and in my case, and in this case, food and luxury in the same sentence, it's like an oxymoron. In regards to controlling the situation, and I've shared this often, that after putting down my alcoholic foods, I continue to struggle with volume eating, probably once every 3 to 4 weeks. And although I have not volume ate in over 2 years, there are still times when I sit down between 8 and 10 p.m. with a book and the thought crosses my mind that I would really like to feel full. And in those moments, I know that the food always wins. I'll never be able to overcome that thinking by myself. And I always reach out for help. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Donna B. Jody E., followed by Sharon K. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. This is Jody E., gratefully recovered in California. Not sure I'm grateful to be in California today, but I am grateful to be recovered. Mm-hmm. I started out as the youngest of 5 children, fairly large family, and we had a freezer full of Hostess Twinkies and cupcakes and ding-dongs and things like that. And I didn't even like them that much, I can remember. So I became a baker so that I could make higher quality baked goods. And I eventually became a pastry chef and prided myself in making luxurious pastries, French pastries, German pastries, etc. But sure enough, this disease is progressive, and I also came down to the place where I would eat anything with sugar and flour in it. I worked in a grocery store, and they would, at the end of the night, they would give away, the old baked goods. And even when they weren't very good, I was powerless over them, powerless. So yes, my alcoholic foods ceased to be a luxury. They became a necessity. I still thought I could control the situation. It took what it took for me to finally concede to my innermost self that I was powerless over these foods and to seek help. And I sought help in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, but didn't really find help of a lasting nature until I found this meeting, I have to say, and started studying this big book and following the directions in the big book and having a community of people who were recovered and who believed that they needed to be entirely abstinent and to work these 12 steps. And that's what's been my solution, and I'm so grateful for it. And with that, I will pass.
Well, thank you, Jody E. Sharon K., followed by Sandy K. Good morning, Sharon.
Hi, Mo. Lovely to hear your voice. I'm Sharon K., a recovered compulsive overeater from Canada. I really related to the first part of the paragraph where he was, making a few bucks and running around and paying off all his debts. Excuse me. That was my life. When I was in the food, I was so focused on feeling bad about the food and how was I going to recover and how was I going to lose all this weight. I never really stopped to look at my life and the ruin I had made of my life. And, you know, I wasn't really living my life. I was just trying to plug holes to make it look like I wasn't the total wreck that I was to other people. And I wouldn't really do a job. I would just do enough so that it looked good. And it's like that's the part of my life that has transformed with this program. It's, you know, it really feels like it's about the food, and it's not about the food. It's making, you know, when they talk about being entirely ready, it's not just ready to do the steps. It's not just ready to put down the food. You've got to be ready to change things you've done your whole life and to really transform your personality. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Sharon Kay. Sandy Kay, followed by Penny C. Sandy Kay?
Hi, this is Sandy Kay calling from Florida. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And I really just want to say that I wish I could give all the rain in Florida to the people on the West Coast, but I can't, just like I couldn't stop eating once that, whatever it is, allergy kicked in. I was not a happy person while I was not a happy person. And because I wasn't happy, my way to cope with life was to eat, and mostly eat, well, sweets and pizza. And I could eat that, no problem. But then I made a decision to move from New York to Florida. And there was that little voice telling me, don't move, don't move, don't move. And I knew what this was going to be great. So I ignored my little voice and just started stuffing it down so I wouldn't hear it with food. And at some point at that time, and I wish I knew when it was, that luxury of being able to eat those sweet things became a necessity. If someone had told me when I was beginning to eat those things that I would not be able to stop, I don't honestly know if I would have listened to them or not. That was a long time ago. I've been programmed for 35 years. And this happened way before that. So knowing I had to eat, I had to eat. And that basically calmed my bad feelings about things that were going on while I was eating. But then when I stopped eating, I knew I had to eat again, and my problem was still there. So until I found OA, which has been the only answer for me in everything that I tried, I cannot remember the last time it was a necessity for me to eat something. I can't remember it was the last time that a food called my name. When I say I have food neutrality, it doesn't mean that I don't like food. I do. I'm not like one of those people who I eat because I have to feed my body. I like food. But the point is I don't have to eat certain foods. And that is only because I've worked the 12 steps over and over and over again. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Sandy Kay. Penny C, followed by Laureen W. Good morning, Penny.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much. I'm Penny C, recovered, not cured, compulsive overeater, living in the Boston area. This paragraph is so familiar to me. In fact, I usually, when I'm working with others, suggest that they take this paragraph and put it in their own words and fill in the blank, so to speak. So for me, it was binge eating ceased to be a luxury. I had to. I didn't know why, but it was like a compulsion. Even as a child, I remember being probably 8 years old, probably in the third grade, and I was a fat kid from the beginning. I have pictures when I was a baby that show me as such an obese baby. And today people would look at that baby and say, that's very unhealthy. But in those days, born of parents who lived through the Depression and born during the Second World War, that was considered, you know, like a sign of people doing well, that they had, you know, fat babies. So, but as an eight-year-old, I remember distinctly coming home, and because, you know, fat kids are humiliated and bullied, even today. And I would come home, not know what to do with all those feelings, and go straight for the food. I one time ate a whole loaf of raisin bread, and then the only time I ever remember being dishonest, lying or stealing, was always to do with food. And when the bread man came to collect on a Saturday morning, see, my mother worked 3 to 11 in a factory, and so she wasn't home. I hid the evidence of the raisin bread. And when the man came to collect on a Saturday morning, my mother said, oh, you didn't leave it. You didn't leave that bread on Thursday. And I stood there, and I'll never forget it. I can picture the whole scene. I stood there and didn't have the courage to say, yeah, Mom, he did. I ate it. And so that man had to use his own money. He kept trying to insist he left it, and he finally said, okay, I guess I made a mistake. And I lied. I mean, by omission, I stood there. And even as an adult, before I got to OA, as soon as I opened my eyes, it became necessary for me to face the day by heading straight to the refrigerator before I did anything else. Never mind prayers or even taking care of personal needs, I would head straight to the refrigerator, and I'd need to get my fix before I could face the day. So this paragraph is, thank you, this paragraph is very meaningful to me, and I thank God for OA and all of you, and I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Penny C. Laureen W., and followed by Barbara L. Good morning, Laureen. Press star, there you are. Press star one.
Hi, this is Laureen W., compulsive overeater. Thank you, Mo, for your service today. And I'm just going to fill in the words of my words. Food became a necessity. Prior to coming into OA, food was a necessity. And I would just, once I started eating, whether it be morning, afternoon, or in the night, I couldn't stop. I would just go from one thing to another. Just thinking that if I only ate this partial, I'd eat the whole sleeve. If I had whatever, a bag, I'd eat a few. No, I'd have to eat the whole bag. Everything was finish everything. And I used to cook a lot, bake, I should say, not cook so much. And whatever I baked at that point in my life, even though I had 3 children, I could finish it off in no time flat. So 2 bottles, often 3, got to be routine. Well, for me, it was more and more. Sometimes in my life, I would diet, like it says in the end, that we had periods of sobriety. Well, I would diet and give some hope to my family that I wasn't going to continue to compulsively overeat the way I did, but it only lasted a short time. And at one point, I just couldn't diet anymore. You know, I tried many different programs, but when I tried them again, I just couldn't lose the weight at all. And when it says I'd waken very early in the morning shaking violently, well, I didn't shake violently, but I didn't have any peace of mind. All I wanted to think about was food, when I was going to eat, what I was going to eat, how much could I get. you know, at the before the end of the meal, I would thinking about the dessert. Whenever we went out to eat, I'd look at the dessert menu first. I was just, food was constantly, constantly on my mind. So when I came in 1992, I said, I don't want to yo-yo anymore, because going up 100 pounds and down 100 pounds was some of my story. And 50 pounds was like nothing, because I'd always gained 60 back. The story was, I was 300 pounds and I had no peace of mind, just none at all. And thank you, God, for OA, because for today, I have such a gift from God. And it started the first night I went. When I went home from that meeting that night, I did not eat. That in itself was a miracle. And then to get a sponsor right away to help me with what I should eat. And at that point, it was just no sugar and three meals a day. And eventually, it had to be no sugar, no flour, because I am a compulsive overeater. I could be compulsive about almost anything. And through these 28 years, I found other things that I could be compulsive about. I had to learn to read labels so well, because you never knew where sugar was going to come up. So thank you so much for my time today.
Thank you, Lorreen. And before we go to Barbara L., let me remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 5, the first paragraph, liquor ceased to be a luxury, and it ends with renewed my wife's hope. And after Barbara L., I'll be taking some more names. Good morning, Barbara.
Hello. Hi, Barbara. My name is Barbara. Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, I can.
Okay, good. My name is Barbara L., and I am located in Maryland, suburb of Washington, D.C. And I'm going to talk about the last part about periods of sobriety. First, I want to say I came initially into OA in the 1980s. And I had just lost 100 pounds in Weight Watchers. So I was a little bit cocky. And I didn't like the way that the people in OA looked, because they were just people. They weren't well-dressed, and they weren't really cute. And my vanity allowed me to just leave. But then, after I gained 100 pounds back from Weight Watchers, that was a little lesson. And then I went on a medical staff, and I lost 80 pounds on that. And I gained that back. And every time I gained back more. And I never stopped eating sugar. I never stopped eating flour. And the food just pushed me around. So when I came into OA, I had pretty much given up, because I was 386 pounds. And I'm tall, but I'm not that tall. So I was lucky to get a sponsor who was kind of aware of things. I committed my food to her, and then the next day she said, so what did you have? And I told her, and she said, well, what about you, what you committed? And I didn't understand honesty at all. In fact, I was still stealing when I came into OA, and then I stole something, and it felt uncomfortable. Because when I don't have the food, I have my feelings, and no thanks. The food worked for a long time to protect me from feelings that I couldn't deal with. So now I have 20 years in OA, mostly in weighing and measuring. And I'm in a, I would say a relapse, although I'm still weighing and measuring my food, and I've only gained 30 pounds, I've gotten complacent. So I just started with a new sponsor, and she says, get on the meetings. And I'm so glad that these meetings are here, because it really helps a lot. And I am eating my weighed and measured food, and, you know, I can't deal with my emotions, so I'm just trying to wait them out, like weather, like bad weather. I don't know what else to do. But if it wasn't for program, I wouldn't be alive, because I actually got a cancer diagnosis when I first came into program. And oddly enough, it was tonsil cancer, so I actually couldn't eat for a while. I was on a feeding tube. I finally reached my Weight Watcher goal weight by starving. But that's over with. I'm healthy. And I can eat again. I prayed to be able to eat again, and I can. But my life is still really a mess, and I'm hoping the steps are going to help me with that. I do have therapy and stuff like that, and I need those other programs. But OA is OA for me is the only thing that gives me freedom from being pushed around by the food. And that is, that lets other things take place. So it's my foundation. I will never let go of it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Barbara L. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I will now take another list of names who people would like to share.
Lisa E.
Okay, I got Lisa.
Mary KB.
After Lisa.
Evan U.
Evan U.
Maria K.
Sherry KB.
Maria J. Who was after Maria?
Sherry KB.
Sherry KB.
Shlomi Hana.
Shlomi Hana. All right, let's stop there because I don't know how much time we have left. So I have Leslie E.S., Evan U., Maria J., Sherry K.B., and Shlomi Hana. All right, Lisa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mo. This is Lisa E.S. in California, and I'm so grateful to be on this call today. I just really value all the shares so far. So this idea of, you know, it cannot be a luxury anymore. It was a necessity. I mean, for me, I don't imagine any time when a dessert was a luxury. It always felt like a necessity, but then over time it became like an incredible necessity. And I would wake up needing to put sugar into my veins. And that was the only way I thought I could get through the day. And then later in that paragraph where Bill talks about like periods of sobriety that gave Lois hope, you know, for me, there were periods of sort of controlled sobriety, right, without the program. And that was more like insanity, being incredibly willful, thinking I could do it my own way, and just that craziness of over and over again thinking I can continue to do it my own way. And so for me, the only solution has been working these 12 steps and abstaining from those alcoholic foods. That is what gives me hope. And so when I have a day, like I've had now over, I don't know, 6 or 7 months now, thank God, abstaining from those foods that cause that insanity, I do wake up with more hope. Even on a day like yesterday where we had literally no sun and it was dark in California all day, I can have a little bit more hope than I would be if I was knee deep in all that food. Today, I am nourished by the food that I ate this morning. I don't feel like I need anything else to give me that kind of calm, that kind of hope. So I'm really grateful today. I have hardly ever shared in this meeting, but I feel like it's so important to give back. And thank you so much for your service, Mo. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Lisa. Evan U, followed by Maria J. Good morning, Evan.
Hi, this is Evan U from California. So great to be with you all here today. I'm trying to screw up my courage and share every 3 days or so. And I don't normally talk about the food because, you know, for me, it's, you know, the food was the solution. And I like to, you know, get down to the causes and what's underneath as much as possible. In this situation, what I get from this paragraph is, it sounds like a prescription to me. It's like, I need to take this many of these in order to get through my day. And, you know, I think back to when this disease was the worst for me, and I had a prescription. My prescription was, I'll start with dinner, but I was a waiter, and so I would eat dinner, including chocolate cake, at 10:30 at night and just be stuffed, and then come home and about, you know, and not think about food and be like, oh, I never want to eat again. And then at 1 in the morning, I'd say, I need to go grab a bite and go to Jack in the Box and order the entire menu and come home and eat it. Wake up the next day and think, oh, God, I'll never do that again. And just be so, so hungover from food. And then at 3 o'clock the next day, I would eat. And that was my prescription. That's what I needed to do to get me through the day. And I just think back to that person I was and just the how horrible I must have felt in order to have to use that prescription just to get through the day. You know, and today I have feelings and I have challenging emotions like every human being. And today I rely upon God and a spiritual solution to deal with those. And I was just, you know, a couple of other things that people said really hit me too. It's just like, when I stole my first job, I worked at the snack bar at school, and I would damage food so that I could say it was damaged and eat it. You know, these are things that are not, you know, this is not the luxury of choice. I wasn't stuffing all that food down my face because I was down deep really enjoying and tasting. I don't even think I was tasting that food. And the other thing that I thought of today is I remember going to my first couple of OA meetings, and I needed a jelly donut and a hot chocolate beforehand just to get me in the door to soothe my nerves enough. That wasn't a choice. That was a necessity, you know. And I'm just grateful that I don't have to live that way today anymore. And the funny thing is I went into that meeting and I had a sponsor, and she worked the steps out of the big book. And I had 8.5 years of abstinence before I drifted away from that work. So I'm so happy to have rediscovered the steps in this meeting and just how powerful that is. And I'm also so grateful for just the 12 steps in general. I can't think of an institution that has greater integrity. And I'm so happy that it's the basis for how I live today. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Well, thank you, Evan. You followed next by Maria J., then Sherry K.B. Maria J.
It's Maria T. Sorry.
Okay. Correction taken.
I think it's me.
Yes, that's you. I just had the wrong last initial. That's you, Maria T.
Yeah, okay, thank you. This is Maria from I'm Recovered in Norway. And it's just been a phenomenal meeting. Really good for me to listen to this. And I just want to say that, you know, I've been in vision for you for the last 5 months. I've been abstinent since the day I came in, since I got a sponsor, and since I started working the steps with her. But prior to that, you know, I was in another big book fellowship. I've known for a long time that the solution was in the big book, but I just never ever could get abstinent. And then somebody suggested vision, and I heard the meeting, and I was just, I was blown away by the amount of recovery. It was just phenomenal. So, you know, I'm just so grateful. My life has gone in the last 5 months, which is really not a long time at all, in the big scheme of things. You know, I've gone from being feeling a victim, feeling terrified all the time, being completely, you know, that luxury was, you know, it wasn't, you know, eating was not a luxury anymore. It was a necessity. It was a necessity to help me to survive every single day, because every single day I was fearful. I was, you know, resentful. I was, you know, I felt a failure. I felt ashamed all the time. I felt, you know, I just felt like trapped. I just felt in a trap. I felt stuck. I felt hopeless. I had just complete despair. And, you know, I had a child who was totally dependent on me with special needs, a teenager. And, you know, I'm a single mom and I was terrified. Today, 5 months later, you know, the food isn't a necessity anymore. It is something I have to do to survive. I am free. I don't feel a victim anymore. I'm taking responsibility. I'm working the steps. I'm sponsoring. I've got a child who's got special needs who even feels so much more safer with me today. So, you know, our relationship has tremendously grown. And I just feel like, you know, the program has given me hope. I'm not despairing anymore. I'm not living in that dark place anymore. And when I'm starting to feel a bit off, you know, I just need to go back to my big book. I need to look at where is it that I'm not, what am I not doing here? Am I not spending enough time with God? Am I not, you know, there's directions there. There's tools there. My solution today is a spiritual solution. And that is my life today. And I'm just so incredibly grateful for it. And just never ever want to go back there again. And you know, I'm always willing to help somebody else because I have such passion for it. And I think whoever thought, you know, a vision for you was divinely inspired by it, just as much as Bill W. So with that, I'll pass, and thank you so much for a fantastic meeting, Mo. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you, Maria T. Sherry KB, followed by Shalomi Tana B. Sherry.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. So glad to hear you on the line this morning, Mo, and thanks for your service and for Team Thursday. Liquor ceased to be a luxury, became a necessity. You know, I came in this program 32 years ago, and I remember moving to California from Atlanta and hearing a speaker, drove from Santa Barbara to Los Angeles to hear the speaker, and he talked about how he used to eat frozen food all the time and out of the freezer, and it was burning and this, that, and the other. And I thought, what a loser. I'll never be like that. That was my thought back in the day. And, of course, fast forward through the years, I used to eat food out of the trash can. But it was wrapped up. In other words, like I would say I was going to start the next day, and I would wrap it up in baggies and put it at the end of the, in the bottom of the trash, but I would dig it out the next day to eat it. And so, you know, here I was. Not only food became a necessity, it was no longer a luxury. I became a slave to it. That's what really, I could just see myself wrapped a chain around my neck and being pulled around by my disease. I mean, what a scary thought. And, you know, waking up in the morning and thinking the first thing, instead of, you know, here's the difference. Being in recovery, I wake up, I say, good morning, God, thank you for this day, you know, please guide and direct me, God. And God's in my mind, my first thought when I wake up in the morning. When I used to be in my disease, I'd wake up and think, where am I going to go get this, and how am I going to go get that, and how can I get away with it, and how can I get it in the house, and how can I, you know, hide it, and then hide it throughout the house. And, I mean, I spent so much time focused on the food, had no idea how enslaved I was to the food and how awful it was, and waking up with sugar hangovers and just being like on heroin. And so the difference today is that it's the complete opposite. I lean on my higher power. I look forward to my day. There's so much energy in my day. I also think of Ruth M's clock of the getting into the cycle of the disease. If you haven't heard it, go listen to it. It's on our Sunday special edition. It's amazing. And I know that I can't do this without God, because here, when I'm in my disease, I think I can control the situation. I can control the food, which is insane. And then when I'm clean, you know, here I am abstinent and everything, it's like that I know I can't. But when I'm in my disease, I have this false sense that I can. How crazy is that? I don't want to ever live that way again, not ever. And I'm so grateful to be here on with you guys and with my higher power's help and getting through all the stuff that I'm going through. And thank God for God, and I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. And we have Shlomi Tana B. You'll take us out. Good morning, Shlomi Tana.
All right. Good morning, Mo. Wonderful to hear your voice. Wonderful to hear everybody. And thank you for your service and every single person on this line. So grateful to be here. And that paragraph is such a powerful paragraph. The line, you know, that everyone is sharing on, that liquor ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. That actually is a line that I think about quite often when I think about my disease. And I can tell you that until a few days ago, that's exactly where I was. That is exactly where I was, that food became a necessity. Food and my binging behaviors were the way that I was coping with life. And it's so interesting because I look at, you know, if I look at my life pre-relapse to relapse, what a difference. What a difference. This disease robbed me of a wonderful summer. It absolutely robbed me of a summer. I was, my kids were home, and for the first half of the summer, we were home camping, and I was so excited about it, and it was going really well, and then the relapse hit, and everything fell apart, absolutely everything. And the more I ate, the more that I needed to eat. And what's interesting also that I really noticed about just, you know, being, having been in relapse very recently is that the necessity, you know, I hear on the line all the time that food is the solution, and that's true. It's my go-to. My binging behaviors are my go-to. But they do not bring me relief. It was a necessity. It was a necessity, but it wasn't something that made me feel good. You know, I guess just like if somebody has to have insulin every day, you know, and take an insulin shot, that probably doesn't make them feel good either, but they have to have it. It was the same thing, the opposite, though, with the food, that I felt like I had to have it. But it just brought me a lot more misery. And even when I was eating, I felt miserable because I knew that this really was not the answer. And I knew that it was really taking me away from the life that I wanted to have. And I'm just so incredibly, incredibly grateful to be back, and incredibly grateful to be trusting and relying completely on my higher power. I just want to comment on the last line also. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. And that's where I got in trouble because I did think I could control it. Recently, I worked the steps in a program that does not believe in the allergy of the body. They believe that it's the behavioral. Thank you. And that didn't work. So that'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. You took us out. I appreciate all the shares for today. Well, that will be our ending. And I thank everybody who gave service and who was on the line. So now let's close with the reading. I will now ask, let me see who I got here. Robin P. You close up.
Amo, thanks.
Yep.
Hi,
thank
you. Oh, thank you. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then, amen.